Welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, where we aim to give swimming the coverage and publicity it deserves. Every week, we celebrate the sport we love with amazing special guests and topics from around the swimming pool. And now, here are your hosts, Scott and Dan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Dan. Dan, how are you doing? You had a good week. We're back and rolling now with the podcast.
I know. It's great to be back. It really has been great to be back. We had a fantastic guest in Alicia last week, and we've got another fantastic guest this week as well. Really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, something a little bit different. And I know we've spent a lot of time previously leading up to the Olympics about elite swimming, elite British swimming. But we have always said that we want to change things up and support other areas of British swim, because it isn't just the elite guys that need shouting and screaming about. Yeah. So on this week's podcast, we actually have a very interesting guest in Nathan Young. So Nathan is a member of GB Deaf Swimming. And unlike the swimmers who are going to be going off to the Paralympics in the next few weeks and race and get all of the media coverage and funding that they deserved, Nathan faces the prospect of having his own swimming journey unfunded, not being funded by British Swimming. And what he's trying to do is raise recognition for the Deaflympics to actually be supported in this country. Because even though right now it isn't an Olympic-funded disability, the Deaflympics, which Nathan has attended, are recognized by the IOC, meaning that Nathan not only has to fund his own swimming training and racing costs to get to these Deaflympics, but he also has to race against fully funded athletes from other nations. So he's trying to create a campaign and basically raise some more awareness, get Deaflympics to the profile level that the Paralympics is, because it should be. It should be.
It's all about equality, isn't it? Has to be. I mean, we don't know enough about it. That's the reason why we want to get Nathan on. And Nathan is going to be effectively leading this podcast to explain to everyone why it should be on the same level as the Paralympics.
Yeah. Now, before we get into the murky waters of funding, let's hear from Nathan a little bit more about his journey through swimming. Because, Nathan, I know you're not going to face the same challenges that other people face in the swimming pool. You're going to have a very different journey. So why don't we start off with, how did you first get into swimming?
I was probably around maybe like 10 or 11, you know, the normal swimming lessons. My mum thought, well, I'm deaf, so she wanted me to have something that I can look towards to build some confidence in different areas. So swimming was just a natural route for me to go down. And then obviously with the problems that I had at school with not being able to hear things, I actually ended up taking time out of the water and get myself back together, and then joined a club when I was 14, like a normal swimming club. And obviously went to all the swimming, went to them, and then actually joined GB Deaf Swimming Club when I was about 15. And then a year later, I was in Texas at the World Deaf Swimming Championships, and I was the youngest in the final when I was there. And then I've really gone from there. I went to Deaflympics in Turkey, Europeans in Poland, and then recently just went to the Worlds in Brazil.
That's been quite a
whirlwind.
I wouldn't mind doing that all the time. It'd be very nice.
I mean, I've seen the photos as well from these Deaflympics. They're not small occasions. They're big things, aren't they? It's not like a small swimming meet at all.
Yeah, I'm surprised that no one actually hears of it, because it is a big thing, like you said, but not everyone that I've spoken to just don't know anything about it.
Well, that's why you're here today.
Exactly.
So what challenges do you face in a swimming pool that are different to your teammates who aren't deaf?
Well, obviously in the pool, I can't actually hear. So the communication can, you know, obviously be a bit of a long process. I am able to lip read, you know, to a good standard, which obviously I think people might not. Might disagree with, because obviously the communication takes forever. So now I use hand signals with my coaches, you know, it's not so much a sign language, it's more like the key technical swimming hand signals that you might get everything. But I think the most challenges actually come when it's racing, when I'm racing, to be honest. So obviously deaf athletes use they use a strobe, like just one single strobe. But in the past, there was no such thing as that, because of technology sort of advanced from there. But it's one single stroke, and that's only to let me know when to go. So before I race, I don't know when to get on the block. Oh, I don't know when to take your marks. So I just sort of like look to my left and look to my right, see when to get on the block. But then I also, when I'm on the block, no matter where I am, I've got to try and look at the referee and sort of see where his lip read, when he starts lip reading, and know he's staying taking marks. But all that should never happen because I should be focused on the race and looking down at the block. And so those little challenges that I might have.
So when at the start of the race, obviously for the able-bodied swimmers, they have the buzzer. So how would you know when to dive in for a race?
It's the flash. We've got one single strobe. But that's all well and good, but it's more the how do I get to the block? Yeah. And sometimes the light's not even there when I turn up for the block. So I have to, there's been so many instances where it's not being there. So I've had to go in the next competition, I had to go up like four or five heats before the race and to make sure it's there. But leading up to that, I'm like, I don't know if it's still there. I don't know if it's still there. And also sometimes it's never worked as well. So I'm on the block and everyone's dived in front of me and it's not worked.
Oh, blimey. Wow. So are you actually racing in usual able body open meets in this country?
Yeah. We have like one deaf competition that we attend once a year. But that's obviously within the club, GB Deaf Swimming. But yeah, I swim mainstream. I was invited to one para meet, but I'm not being invited back. So I always come there.
And that's the same with the training. You train with able-bodied swimmers as well as the deaf swimmers too?
Yes, because I swim with Real Metro and I've been to Liverpool and I've been around. So yeah, it's always been mainstream clubs.
So say you're racing at a competition, which is able-bodied open meet, and you said your heat's coming up in four or five times. Whose responsibility is it to put that strobe on the block for you ready to go? Do you have to do it or does your coach do it? Do the officials make sure it's there for you?
Well, I'm supposed to go up or coach whoever, but I quite like taking responsibility to go and do it, even though I shouldn't have to do it in the first place. But I do it. I go up and put the I tell them that I'm in these heats, but there's been so many instances where I've done that, but it's not been there. And when I get to the block, I'm like, wait, I have to start the race. I put my hand up and I'm like, no, you can't get it yet. My serve's not here.
Blimey.
Yeah, so I've always got that nervous anxiety about whether it's going to be there. I went to a race competition recently and there was two strails, one lane five, one lane four. And the one lane four wasn't working because I was racing in lane five. But my next race was in lane four. But I remember previously that wasn't working. So I had to stop it because I had to make sure that one was working before I went on the block.
Blimey. It doesn't sound overly helpful for you. If you're trying to prepare for a race, you've got all of these other things going on in your head that just get in the way of you having a good performance. I mean, in my opinion, actually, Dan, for able bodies, a light or something like that on the blocks wouldn't be that, I don't know, it would be beneficial for able-bodied swimmers as well, because we saw at Europeans when Brody Williams, the speaker in his block, didn't go off. So, I mean, it's a perfectly capable adaptation to add this strobe to every block. If someone can find a more cost-effective way of adding it into the existing system, I actually think it would benefit able-bodied swimmers, not just deaf swimmers like yourself, Nathan.
I'm kind of interested, actually. So, you know, you struggle with the getting up onto the blocks because, you know, you can't hear the whistles to get onto the blocks. What would you suggest would be the best thing to get you through that sort of phase rather than looking around and checking what everyone else is doing?
Well, at the international competitions that I go to, they've got a traffic light system.
Okay.
So, obviously, the last two competitions I've been to have both had, like, this on normal traffic lights. So, it's red, amber, green. If you're red, get on the block. Amber go to take Mars and then green go. I mean, that's as simple as it can get, really. I think the whole situation around it is, will it connect with the system that starts everyone off? It's got to connect to it. Yeah. So I don't think they want to spend the money to try and find a way of doing it. And we're happy with this one strobe, but with all the problems that it causes me, I think something needs to be improved, really.
Do you know what the cost difference is between the traffic light and the strobe?
I don't know the traffic light, but I know the strobe on itself is just a £500. I think that's what I was told.
Okay. I mean, that's not a small investment, is it? It's, I don't know, you would have thought it could come down slightly. I don't know if there's a way to figure that one out.
I don't know. I was reading something actually. I think it was on on SwimSwam, and some swimmer has invented a new sort of strobe and traffic light and putting it at the end of blocks. I think she was a backstroker. So I think it's on the improvement, if you like. It's just a case of gaining exposure and building up the profile of deaf swimmers and what it's like to be a deaf swimmer in the Deaf Olympics, of course.
So if we touch upon a little bit more about the funding that you have. So we said in the introduction, you basically get nothing from British Swimming to support your career and your journey through swimming. So I'm going to ask you to speak about a few numbers and maybe shock some people into understanding just how financially insecure your career is. So how much does it cost you off your own back to train right now?
It's gone because of COVID. The fees have gone up again. So it's £110 now?
A month.
Yeah, £110. I think so, yeah, £110 a month, yeah.
And then what sort of costs are you facing when you go to these international competitions? So when you went to Texas, I presume there's quite a hefty plane bill for that one.
With flights and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that was £3,000. But that's not including kit, food, and like, you know, the supplements that you sort of take along with you.
Yeah. All in all, if you're going to the Deaf Olympics, what sort of figure does that set you back each time?
Probably like £3,500, something like that. Every time.
That's a lot of money.
The trunks are what, £375? You don't,
So you can't even get like a sponsor through Speedo or anything like that.
A TYR or TS sponsored us for Deaf Olympics.
Yeah.
But since then, I've literally tried to get loads of different sponsors, and they're there. They've said, oh no, we've used up all our money for the year on other athletes. So obviously.
So what sort of level are you competing at as well? So are you right at the top end? You're finalist at these Deaf Olympics and Deaf international competitions?
Yeah, I came fifth twice at Worlds last year, of 2019. And I was only half a second off third, so I was quite gutted about that. I'm at the top, but I'm hoping to try to do it this next Deaf Olympics coming in May.
Where have you got to go to for that one?
Brazil again.
They're not close, these places. It's not like Europe where it's like a 3-hour, 2-hour flight. But no, Brazil is like a 10-hour flight.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a long flight. Yeah.
God. Well, you've been doing a campaign as well on Twitter that we've been seeing. How is that campaign going for you?
It's been really good. I mean, I'm on, I think it's 110 days of now questioning or raising awareness of like why the it's the government really, isn't it? The government that set who the money's going to. So it's on 110 days of trying to campaign against this, and we've had no real response, to be honest. We've got like responses, but when you actually look at the replies of the emails, it's very much the same from each person, just twisted around. Saying that you can't do this because you're not under the Paralympics, and it's like, well, we've been the Paralympics, the Deaf Olympics have been going since 1924, making it the second longest running but obviously they're seeing Paralympics as more exposure for them, so they're not going to put it into the Deaf Olympics.
And the Deaf Olympics, other countries are fully funded for this, aren't they?
Yeah, some countries like Russia obviously funded. Ireland has been told they're funded, and they took two. They only took two swimmers to the Olympics. Yeah, so they're funded.
I did not know that. Wow, that surprises me even more.
Have you got an Irish grandmother you can find out of nowhere?
I'll have a look at the family tree.
So, how many other swimmers in this country are in the same boat as you?
Well, I mean, that's the problem that we faced, is that since Deaf Olympics, we've lost all our swimmers, really, because obviously I was the only swimmer to actually go to the Worlds in 2019 in Brazil. I had to pay for my coaching that same as well, so I actually paid $5,000 instead of my normal $2,500. I had to pay $5,000 for him to go. So yeah, that was another big fundraising thing that I had to do. So I was the only one, but partly there's now, we've got a European short course coming up in November, which is in Poland, thankfully, so it's closer.
Got on a Ryanair flight.
Yeah, I felt the only three swimmers want to go to that. So it's still only a small amount. But yeah, we've lost all our swimmers because they're not getting they've all got to go after uni and get jobs, and they can't commit to the athlete lifestyle without the money there.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got to fund it yourself, it is a very hard journey it's just to stay motivated, to keep going, isn't it? Yeah. Just knowing that you're going to have to do a full-time job to pay for your hobby, and it can be draining, and mentally as well as physically. Is there any sort of prize money available for you when you go to these competitions?
No, there's nothing.
Oh my.
I know that Bush will get prize money, and it's a lot of money. I don't know the actual figure, but I've been told. I'm not going to put a number, but a figure out there because I'm completely wrong. Mm. But yeah, it's a lot of money. I've been told we should get, but we get nothing there.
That's shocking. I mean, this is where equality has to come in, because I assume the training you do is much the same as an able body swimmer, maybe 8 to 10 times a week. Would I be right in saying?
Exactly the same stuff. I push myself, and obviously I've got that end goal in my mind at all times, so it's I know what I'm aiming for. But obviously, with it's hard sometimes when you're getting up and you're like, this is my money I'm paying into this. This makes it it's harder.
Yeah, because the event of itself, the Deaflympics, isn't really too dissimilar to Olympics and Paralympics. It's just a different sort of category, if you like, so they should be the same level. Is there anything majorly different between the three competitions?
Well, I've been told that people, obviously when they go to it, they're actually surprised at the level of standard of the organization. You know, it's obviously we're not under, so like Paralympics go to the exact same place in Tokyo coming up, they'll be competing there. We don't have that. We go to another place, because it's run by a different organisation.
It's a shame you couldn't go to the same place and use the facilities over again, because it might save money for that organisation.
I mean, obviously, I don't know what goes on at the higher levels of organisations, but I've always said that. I was like, you know what, it'd be great if it could be at three different events, like three different organisations, or Olympics, Paralympics, Deaflympics. That'd be great. Like, it'd be more exposure for them, exposure for us as well.
Yeah. Makes sense, doesn't it? Makes sense.
Now, I believe in our research leading up to this podcast, we found out Bucks is now recognising being deaf as its own category when it comes to Bucks competition this year. So I think it's S15. The first step in the right direction to you guys getting a bit more exposure and to putting it on the map?
Absolutely. That's only like one step, one hurdle gone.
Yeah.
But they changed it really quickly, so I'm surprised how quickly I thought it was going to take longer. But it was taken out about 5 years ago. But for some unknown reason, really. And then they came back and they were like, yeah, we're putting it back in due to the campaign. So yeah. It gives you a bit of hope. But obviously, it's a small bit of hope.
Is it a case of you needing to go to these meets that are televised on TV? So I know before the Olympics, they had the Sheffield Para Meet. Is it a case of you needing to go to those meets and getting exposure at those meets to help your campaign grow and to gain some exposure? Or are there any other avenues that people need to help you out with exposure? Is it meets, or is there something else that we can do?
Well, I think it's trying to get it to the top, really. You know, the people that make decisions need to change the way that they look at deaf women, because obviously you can't, especially like say for uni with Bucks, for example, we get loads of support in schools with like scribes, reading, you know, equipment and stuff. But they say, right, when you're in swimming or when you're in sport, you're not actually disabled. And it's the same with like government payment, you know, to deaf people, they give government payment out, but then they're saying in sport, actually you're not disabled. So there needs to be like a change in recognition and support for deaf athletes and funding support, really.
And that's just a case of continuing your campaign at the moment. So you say you're on 110 days. Are you willing to go for the full year or beyond?
Yeah, I've got to, haven't I? Yeah. I can't give up. It's great. I knew it was going to be a hard challenge. But people out there, it's not just me that I'm trying to fight for. It's all the younger athletes that look at their sport but realise when they get to a certain point, they can't go any further. And you want that to change. You want it to be like, oh, I want to aim for the Deaf Olympics gold, where they don't see that. They only see it as like, I've got to aim for, or just try and, I've got to pay myself. But that's the thing. I've got to pay myself to do this sport.
So, I mean, if it came, I don't know, 10 years down the line and you've had a career in deaf swimming where you've had to pay for yourself the whole way through, you get to that point, even if you never win a major medal, but say because of the efforts you've made over your career, the younger generation coming through no longer have to pay for their career, would you see that as a successful kind of swimming career for you?
Yeah, absolutely. The only reason I started this was for, well, it was for them really. I knew that the likelihood of me getting the benefit of it was going to be unlikely. I can only hope that it comes in soon, and you know, I can after Deaf Olympics, because I know it won't come before Deaf Olympics. If it was going to happen, it would happen very soon. But if after Deaf Olympics, if it doesn't come in, then yeah, I'll have to do it for the younger ones, because I don't know how long I can keep doing this sport at this level without the funding, because I can't keep paying. I can't get a job and I can't keep going to these competitions and trying to perform at the highest level and come back and then get into another job. And yeah, it's not going to work. So yeah, it will be for the young ones and it will be successful if it.
I think it's amazing sort of the challenges that you're facing and the fact that you've already traveled the world basically to do these competitions and it's not been cheap. And I'm adding the figures up in my head. I'm just like, wow, that's a lot of money that you've had to find yourself. That's the price of a first car. That's all stuff like that. Yeah. It's not cheap at all. I think it's outstanding that you've got this commitment to swimming and you're paying yourself to do it. It's incredible. What can we as Propulsion Swimming and our listeners do to help you? Is there anything that we can get on board with, sign a petition, help you with a GoFundMe page? Is there anything that we can get on board with and we can direct people towards?
Yeah, so obviously we could continue sharing the campaign, really, because I think the more exposure you get, you can't hide from it. The more exposure, the better the result. And obviously, like you said, there will be a GoFundMe page. As much as I don't like asking people for money, I really don't like it. This is the reason why I stopped doing why I started this, is because it got to a point where you can't keep asking family and friends and people out in my community to keep, you know, donating money, because it doesn't feel great for me to be asking people for money all the time. I'm gonna start going for my page shortly, so that'll be set up. And then really it's trying to get these top organizations for the swimming, some high levels in the government to realise that deaf athletes need to be treated equally amongst their power athlete peers. And
I wouldn't feel too guilty about asking people for money to fund your career. Dan did it to make sure he got to the elite. to get to the elite level, he had to be sponsored and funded for that one.
From my point of view, I actually think it's impossible to get to the top level without funding or some sort of financial help. And so the fact that you've got as far as you have all off your own back is full credit to you. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. Like Scott was saying, I mean, that's really, really good. And you deserve all the credit and praise in the world. Honestly, you do.
Yeah, we're going to carry on supporting your campaign and push it out there as much as we can. We'll get in touch with a few people behind the scenes as well and see if they can help you out.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Before we kind of end this podcast, Nathan, because it's been great chatting to you, I actually want to do our usual quick fire questions that we do to our elite swimming guests, because you are an elite swimmer. So to start with, what is your favorite event in swimming?
200 free, yeah.
Good choice. Good event.
Who is your swimming idol?
Michael Phelps, actually, yeah. I met him back when I was a young swimmer.
That's cool.
Yeah.
What's your proudest moment in swimming?
Probably that first international competition. I was only 16 at the time. And so, yeah, definitely getting that first comp.
What's the hardest set you've ever done in training?
There's been too many. I couldn't think of it. There's been too many that I can't.
That's all right. And if you were to go on a road trip, you've got three spaces in the car. Who would you take with you? They can be friends, family, or celebrities. Or, you know, you could just put all the people in charge of funding and hijack them and take them away until they fund you.
That's a great idea. I'll take everyone. I'll have a long talk on this road trip. Yeah.
Before we end this podcast, I know some people are going to be asking us, well, Nathan Steph, how has he spoken to you on this podcast? So why don't you end with explaining how you're able to communicate with us on this platform?
Yeah, I've got cochlear implants, which really does, it's not normal, like hearing aids. With hearing aids, it only gives you a set level of hearing. With implants, once you reach a certain level of deafness, you get cochlear implants. Which took mine up right really hard. So I can hear really quite well with them when I was about 15. But one of the positive that's come with it is that it's got Bluetooth connected to it, so it connects to my phone. So I'm just like, it's Bluetooth. So whatever you say, it's going straight to my implants and straight to my head. So that's how it's quite. I can hear you without any confusion. This is not how I hear in the water, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say you can't wear those for swimming, can you?
Nothing. I've got no hearing in the water at all.
Great stuff, Nathan. Well, like I said, we're going to keep supporting your campaign. We'll push it out there. If anyone has any questions for you, we'll direct them to your Twitter page, I think is the best place to get hold of you. And we'll put a few links in the description of this podcast as well. Thank you so much for coming on to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I know we've been lining this up for a little while. We've been wanting to do it for a while. So it's been great having you on. I'm really interested in hearing your story.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's really good that you're giving me some more exposure out there.
Thank you. Well, very best of luck with your campaign, and hopefully it gets sorted soon, but keep going until you get heard, basically.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing how you get on over in Brazil as well.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be a good result.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, that just about rounds up this week's episode from the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. We'll be back next week with, I believe, an ISL preview because racing is around the corner again, would you believe? So if you haven't subscribed already to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. We'll be back in 7 days' time. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.